Welcome to Transmission Podcast. I'm your host, Cecilia Lynn Jacobs. With audio and video signals streaming in from Proxima B, or Lux Terra as it's been renamed, there is so much news about what this means and who these beings from another planet are. Are these aliens really just like us? They seem that way, from their actions we can see in the video transmissions. Over the months, we've watched them engage in what seems like sports, government, religion, and cultural activities. Or at least that's what we can guess from the untranslated broadcasts. It seems like the world has come to a stop, like everything is paused as the Earth's global communities watch and listen to a world 4.22 light years away, to transmissions from 4 years ago, only reaching us now, guessing how their recent past relates to our present here on Earth. Up until now, all reports from the International Coalition of Researchers, Engineers, Scholars, and World Leaders based in Edinburgh have been short and vague, still working. No new reports. No comment. Until now, the world has speculated and guessed at the nature of the transmissions. Everyone has a theory that it's just another Apollo 13 hoax, that because Lux Terra doesn't rotate, everyone on the star-facing side must be perpetually sunburned. Without any new facts, misinformation runs rampant. No longer. Official statements from the International Coalition in Edinburgh announced this month that they've not only found the key to translation, but that communication is now possible. We can translate and interpret what these broadcasts mean. The researchers and scientists of the coalition state that they can confidently send a message to Lux Terra. We thought that this would mean a similar reply transmission, broadcasts of the Earth's audio, visual, and digital archives, or a directed signal. But the surprises keep coming. The coalition is not waiting to send a signal or even an unmanned probe to Lux Terra. New funding, equipment, and expert engineers pouring into Edinburgh tell us that they are preparing to send a manned mission to meet our celestial neighbors. What does this mean for the world? For those that choose to board a ship to another star? For everyone left behind? We have experts from the International Coalition here today to set the record straight. To understand the future of the transmissions, please, stay close.
My name is Dr. Skylar Adhar. I'm Chief Science Officer for the International Lux Terra Coalition.
Welcome, Dr. Adhar. It's great to speak with you. In light of recent events, our listeners have many questions about the translations and about this manned mission. We all do.
Well, I'll answer what I can.
Before we get started, could you explain the name change to Lux Terra?
We're still referring to the same planet, Proxima B. A letter just didn't seem appropriate anymore. Plus, it was a mouthful around the lab.
Lux Terra?
Scientists seem to be much more comfortable with Latin.
For months, we've heard very little from the International Coalition. Why was that?
Well, when we first received the transmissions from Lux Terra, we had no idea how to translate them, or indeed, if we'd ever be able to. We'd been running through every possible translation technique, from numbers to letters, every alphabet we know, scanned every bit of visual data, too, to try to identify any patterns.
We did an earlier show about translation techniques, episode 3, if you haven't caught it yet. So you've been all hands on deck, scanning through every transmission to find the Rosetta Stone?
In a manner of speaking, yes.
And so how did you actually find it?
We were very lucky to find it. And in only a few months, our computer engineering team, headed by Dr. Keely Givens from the University of Edinburgh, programmed our AI to focus on all sorts of patterns, including patterns not in the speech itself, but in the nature and the length of the sound waves. As it turns out, Lux Terran's speech lies in a range just outside of what the human ear can pick up. Only 10% of their vocal range overlaps with ours.
Huh. Does that mean that dogs can hear it better than we can?
Well, no.
I'm no. just kidding, but it would have been funny if they could have heard it and humans couldn't.
Well, it's amazing just how possible that is. But no, once we recognized the pattern, we stopped trying to find a key within the audio and started manipulating the range of the audio itself. We still don't have the written language translated, but our linguists will have a basic understanding of the main alphabet before the ship launches.
When will that be? Everything seems like it's moving so quickly.
As soon as is possible. But we're looking at months here, not years.
Wow, this is truly groundbreaking. Why not send an unmanned mission first? We sent Mars rovers well before launching any missions there, as well as satellites out to the furthest reaches of the Milky Way. What's the rush?
Yes, that was the old way. Knowing that these beings are out there, it has given us greater impetus to be bigger, to be more... Listen, if we don't seize this opportunity to connect, we never will. Humanity will lose interest as soon as the next big celebrity scandal erupts. We have to move now, while everyone is focused forward. The mysteries of the universe may wait for us, and they may not. Trying to have a conversation first with the 8 or 9 year time lag, frankly, we're talking lifetimes.
But doesn't a manned mission there also mean a full lifetime?
Many lifetimes. The lifetimes of everyone who boards the ship, their direct and future descendants. And the same goes for everyone here on Earth. The answers won't come directly from the launch, but it's more effective than anything else we can do at this stage of our civilization. It's a guarantee to make contact, and it's the one that our world is making happen. Scientists are putting their money where their mouth is now, committing funding and even volunteering for the mission to Lux Terra.
So who is going on this mission?
It's much too soon to announce our crew. Not many have confirmed just yet. It's a delicate process.
Understandably. And how is the crew being selected? As chief science officer, do you play a role?
No. I'm not responsible for selecting the crew.
Oh, so then do the funders have any say in the matter?
Listen, we have to be clear about this. This is a global project. The religious contributions are financial backing, nothing more. The governments of the world are represented, but no one person or committee is in charge. Like I said, it's a delicate process. Now, when it comes to the selection process, no one person or entity has the final say. Everyone and no one wants to go. Everyone wants to be represented.
Yes, we discussed this in an earlier episode. The needs of a mission of this nature, multi-general, in a closed environment. So how is that happening?
By nominations. We are collecting nominations and submitting them to an algorithm. That, in combination with intensive interviewing, will determine the best team possible.
A computer program is picking the crew?
Well, we let the computer program review all the transmission data, which broke the translation. Another computer program translated it to make communication possible. Yes, we do put a lot of tasks onto the shoulder of machines, but we also have a manned crew. It's that combination that makes humanity so powerful. Yes, we could send a probe, but that's still just adding another step in the process. It is the belief of the coalition, one which I wholeheartedly support, by the way, that humans need to make this connection. There's no other mission worth supporting, and we are staking our lives on it.
Thank you, Dr. Adha. We look forward to hearing more updates from you and your crewmates as this mission progresses.
You certainly will.
Next, what do we know about Lux Terrans so far?
What we know now is that the Lux Terrans, as they're being called, look like us. Beyond that, it's still conjecture.
That's Zara Karim, anthropologist and researcher from York University. As an expert in first contact and indigenous community bridging, she is now advising the international team translating the transmissions.
Well, interpreting. My job is not to translate. It's to make sense of the translations.
So what's the difference?
It's like, I grew up in Canada, and translating between English and French, Quebecois French, can be a fraught process. Certain Christian religious terms in English are completely innocuous, but say those in Quebec, not so much. Getting the translations from the transmissions are like that. Except we don't even know what to look out for, what their cultural context is, even what their planet looks like, besides some grainy pictures. We're just seeing one slice of Luxeteran life and guessing from there.
But now that we have the translations, we won't be guessing as much, right?
In some ways. But as far as we can tell, these are accidental broadcasts. Leakage, as the researchers from METI and SETI will tell you. They don't mean to send us this.
How far along are you with the translations? Dr. Schuyler tells us that they have found the correct audio range, but most of us are still waiting to hear what most of the videos and audio transmissions really say.
It's a slow process. There are months of content to pour through. We're releasing videos to the public as fast as we can. And as you've mentioned, our international team has other priorities, preparing for the first contact mission.
So what does that mean for you, Zada? How does that change your work?
It gives it more focus. Organizing the content before was such a daunting task, even for our international teams. Now, with this mission and its timeline, we all have purpose and key goals to achieve when reviewing the translated transmissions.
So we won't be getting a translation of their sports or reality television shows anytime soon?
Those aren't at the top of the list, sorry. Though, you'd be surprised how wide our scope is. The leisure programs of another society can be just as key to understanding what makes them tick as their news, government, and religious programming. We keep revising our views of the Romans and Etruscans, and only by studying the gladiator games do I even begin to understand MMA or wrestling.
Not a sports fan?
No. But many of my colleagues are. Many people in my office are following Zorba, as I've been calling it.
You'll have to share the rules and translations of those matches with us soon. From watching the untranslated transmissions, we've seen what seems like sports events, news broadcasts, reality, television shows. So far, the people on Luxeterra seem to have everything that we have. Is that true?
It seems that way, but I'd be cautious about making any other generalizations. Throughout the centuries, stories of interstellar beings and extraterrestrials have always been ways we work through our own problems, mirrors to reflect us.
That certainly seems to be the immediate response, to start comparing our civilization to theirs.
It's human to do that. We seek out patterns, we seek out meaning in the universe, but the discovery of life on Luxeterra doesn't mean we found it. Besides, if they are just like us, that means war, disease, poverty. We might not like all the meaning we find.
We shouldn't be following their sports and newscasts?
No. That's not what I'm saying. Keep watching. Keep tuning in. What you and your listeners learn about Luxeterra is just as important as what anthropologists like me see. Just remember that what you're seeing and hearing are just one part of the story. It's like watching news from anywhere on this planet. Check the source, the context, what other sources are saying. They don't mean for us to see this. What are we missing? What is being left out?
Is that why the International Coalition has decided to send a manned mission to Luxeterra? To get the whole picture?
It has certainly played into the decision, although to be honest, that's way above my pay grade.
Is meeting them in person the only way?
No, it's not, but it is the only available option that ensures humans get to make first contact. Any other form of sending our DNA to another planet or beaming our transmissions gives us less control of the situation. I've studied numerous first contact events throughout history. And my research today in the Northwest Territories and other indigenous populations in North America shows that the damage done in those first encounters has lasting consequences. We don't want to be on either side of that equation. Not as our first introduction of Earth to the rest of the universe. There's so much we can't control in this. The journey, the timing, the location where our crew will land and meet with the Luxeterans on their home soil. But we can make sure we have the best tools possible. The adaptability and perception that only humanity has.
So will you be joining the rest of the team in Edinburgh?
Yes. My role as cultural contact director is making it more and more of an imperative. Plus, as you know, my sister Leila Karam is also playing a key role in the engineering of the ship. It's sort of a family affair now, at least for us.
Yes, we'll be speaking with her later in this episode.
Sounds right. She'll have much more to say about how we'll be getting humans across the universe. Tell her that Mom and Dad and I will see her soon.
Thanks, Zara. I will. After the break, we'll be hopping the pond to speak with the flight director and mission commanders at the Edinburgh headquarters of the International Luxottera Coalition. Stay close.
Life support, starting a self-contained sustaining ecosystem, agriculture, navigation once we've left the solar system. I can say we because it's actually happening now.
This is Leila Karam, mission director at the International Luxottera Coalition. She couldn't wait to tell us about how her research as an aeronautical engineer and astrophysicist is being utilized for the interstellar mission to Luxottera. Dr. Karam.
Leila.
Right, of course, Leila. How are we already so far along with the design of an interstellar mission? I thought that we were still trying to launch a manned mission in our own solar system.
No. That's just what the public sees. We've been blocked from doing anything bigger than that, from even trying, honestly. Political squabbling, funds diverted from space agencies to other short-term concerns, have blocked us from making tangible progress on anything larger. But, as you can see here in Edinburgh, with the backing of the International Coalition, there hasn't been much delay. Most of the mathematics, the design, small-scale models, materials, logistics, all of that has already been worked out. It was just a matter of putting it into practice.
So it doesn't bother you at all that the funds are coming from places like the Catholic Church or the Church of Latter-day Saints?
They can't stop us once we launch. And no one organization has a majority vote. None of us do. I, personally, have never been religious, but I have to say, they're surprisingly less red tape. They let you do what you are called to do.
And you are called to take humans on the first interstellar space journey?
Yes.
Then how long have you been working on interstellar space travel?
Unofficially, most of my career. Once I began researching the location and the possibilities of life on planets outside of the solar system, those were the problems I wanted to solve. Not how to build yet another better telescope. No, I wanted to build the ways for humanity to get there.
And do you expect to go on this journey?
That's not why I'm doing this. I don't have any kind of manifest destiny complex. I'm not doing this to put my flag on another planet. I am doing this because I am one of the only people who can make this happen. I am the only one with the skill sets for launching and sustaining humanity's longest journey into space to date.
I understand that. That's actually not at all what I was suggesting. You must be feeling an enormous amount of anticipation and a decent amount of stress advising on such an important mission.
Yes. Before we choose the crew, I have to make sure that our ship will get us there. Anyone picked for this mission knows that they are committing to a life within the space that my team is designing right now. The life support systems we're creating will recycle the same air for the crew's entire lifetime, for their children's lifetime. We're planning contingencies and systems that will make it safe for fetuses to gestate in microgravity and thrive once they are born into that environment. To live there, protected by the materials inside and outside of the ship's walls from radiation, the same radiation that will power the ship on its journey through space.
So it will be powered by a low-thrust system. We have heard from other researchers that this was a consideration.
It has been a long discussion as to how many solar sails we need and whether we'll take the materials to craft new backups in flight.
So you are planning on using solar sails?
Of course. No one has told you about the ship's propulsion systems?
We have a general idea of the options that could be used, but that's why you're here, to make sure that we do understand what this mission entails and what's already being prepared.
If we had more time, I would launch without any high thrust systems, but
Unfortunately, it looks like there will have to be a highly combustible launch for at least part of the ship.
But there will also be solar sails. Will they make up most of the ship's power en route?
Some of it. Others have argued it's not worth the effort. But we are going to need every iota of power we can produce while in the solar system to keep us moving forward once we leave it. Anything to let the universe push us along and gain momentum. And I am going to make sure that the research continues here in Edinburgh to ensure that whatever launches next will have the research and infrastructure needed to operate on a purely low thrust system, to not mess up this planet's ecosystems anymore in the process of leaving it.
It is good to hear that this planet is part of the Coalition's concerns. It seems like every other current event has been pushed to the side with this news.
For good reason. This mission is a legacy, not an escape route. Edinburgh needs to be an emblem, an example for how this is done.
So why is the Coalition based in Edinburgh?
Access to world-class research facilities, the support of a university system accustomed to international collaboration, not to mention proximity to an international airport, as well as the governments of Europe, room to manufacture, and for my immediate purposes, the direct flights to Toronto. Listen, Joel can tell you more. Unfortunately, I have to get back to work.
Thank you so much for your time. We do hope to speak with you again, Layla, no matter where you end up.
Thanks, Cecilia.
For a closer look into the International Coalition's facilities, we welcome Dr. Joel Horton, Flight Director and Public Relations Manager.
Hi, Cecilia. We're glad to have you here, to finally let the public in on our process.
Dr. Horton, it's great to have you here. Layla Karim showed us her designs for the ship. What else can you tell us about what's going on here at Coalition headquarters?
A flurry of activity. It's been this way since we started receiving the signals. The Royal Observatory of Edinburgh has been coordinating global efforts since the transmissions were confirmed as genuine. They were just well placed. Luck of the draw. With the translation, spades of social scientists have joined the linguists and analysts interpreting everything streaming in. And with the funding and announcement to launch a mission, it's become another institution unto itself.
Is that why the Coalition is based in Edinburgh? Luck of the draw?
No. No, it would have moved if any portion of this couldn't happen here. It is luck of the draw that the city could support us. It can sustain our manufacturing in small doses, as well as supply us from air and ocean with other materials. Over the North Sea, we have a great reception area for additional radio telescope arrays, and now a future launch site.
Wow, so what's your part in all of this?
It's twofold, as the title suggests. As flight director, I manage the design teams, integration of all systems, and coordinate our schedules with the larger institution, monitoring our work against the timeline for launch. As a public relations manager, I'm here to make sure the public starts understanding what we're doing and why we're investing so much time and effort into this mission. Why now?
Yes. Dr. Skylar Adhar mentioned some of those reasons, as did Zada Karim. What's the official stance?
It's hard to pick just one. It feels like every meeting I attend has a different engine behind it. The backers had their reasons, our world leaders have theirs. But around here, it's a dream come true for so many of us. To do the work we've always done, but to have the whole world behind us, believing in us. We don't like to stop and examine the reasons why, just in case we wake up to find the funding is dried up and we're all the weird space geeks staring up into the skies again. I have finally convinced my daughter that I am cool.
She believes you're a rocket scientist now?
She's 8. She always thought I was a rocket scientist. Only now, she wishes I weren't so far away.
Well, where is she now?
Back in Canada at home with my wife. But my family, and many others, will be joining me here soon. The work is too important, and well, Edinburgh is a pretty exciting place to be in August, even without a big rocket launch.
Is that why you are working so hard on this mission? To bring about a brighter future for your daughter? One where this planet isn't the only option?
No. Not because I'm a father. Being a father and husband, they're core to my being, but this journey and what we're building here at Coalition headquarters, it goes beyond any one person, beyond any individual or group of any size. For those of us who have done this work for decades, like myself, Skylar, and Layla, we've always been dreaming and preparing for it. This is the work of a lifetime. Getting to work together as the team that launches it, that is the luck of the draw.
You sound like a very tight-knit group here. Almost like another family.
We do spend a lot of time in these buildings. But Layla and I actually began our research together at the University of Toronto in Dr. Skylar's lab. It has taken us down different paths. She always dreamed bigger about what types of starships we could engineer. Always knew that journeying to an exoplanet was possible, and I'm just so happy that my work and hers are converging again. We complement each other in terms of our coalition positions.
Do you know yet who will be on board for the journey to Luxoterra?
No. We can't make any official statements or guesses on the crew manifests.
But some of the researchers on your team now will be on board, and some will stay behind, right?
That's true. Not everyone can go, and not everyone has that choice.
Do you know where you'll be in that group? Where Layla, Skylar, and the other researchers will be during the August launch?
Like I said, we're just nose to the grindstone for the moment. These are all huge shifts, and speculating just... it isn't useful to our teams or our families. Or to those of you out there listening to this broadcast. What I can promise is that we'll be pulling cargo from all over the globe to take on this mission. The goal of the coalition is to exhibit the very best this planet has to offer to Luxoterra. Whether you're on board or standing with both feet on planet Earth when our ship launches, you will have the chance to contribute. The coalition will be releasing more information soon. All I can say now is to keep listening to Transmission Podcast and watching for updates on luxoterra.com.
Thanks, Joel. We look forward to meeting the rest of the team and your family the next time we visit the Coalition offices.
Thank you, Cecilia. You're welcome here anytime. We're looking forward to it.
When we come back, we'll be speaking to the parents of Layla and Zada Karim. What does it mean to be related to the Coalition members at the center of this mission to Luxoterra? Stay close. Be related to the Coalition members at the center of this mission to Luxoterra.
We told our children to always dream big. More than that, we showed them how to. Go anywhere, study anything, contribute to the betterment of the human race. Don't let where you came from ever hold you back.
That's Yusuf Karim, aeronautical engineer and father of not one, but two of the scientists working on the transmissions to Proxima B.
Layla and Zada have worked hard, so hard. It makes all the change and sacrifice we made worth it.
And Nada Karim, their mother. The Karims joined me from their home in Toronto to share what the discovery of Luxoterra and the announced one-way mission have meant to their family.
Thanks for having us. We never thought we'd be the ones being interviewed.
We each came to Canada as children in different waves of refugees. I came in the first round in 2016. It seemed like hostilities would never end.
Yusuf.
What? Half a century later and we can't say what was really happening. Isn't that why we left? That is why we left.
Is everything okay?
Yes.
It's okay. It's just a lot to take in. What he's saying is that we came to Toronto in the mid-2010s to start a new life with our families. And now, look where our daughters are.
Layla, an astrophysicist and engineer making huge strides in exoplanet research, and Zada... Has Zada ever been home to Damascus.
Yes, yes, Yusuf. She went on a research trip, remember? Today, she works with indigenous population in Canada. But during her master's, she traveled everywhere.
Needed to know where her roots are. Everything we left behind. That's what she studies, her work. But our Layla always looking out past the stars, instead of little humans scampering around down here on Earth.
You're one of those little ants, too. Don't you forget that.
The transmissions have certainly put that in perspective. How small we are in the grand scheme of the universe. Though your daughters seem to study such different fields, the translation project has brought them both together?
Yes. It's a miracle. Such smart girls. Always playing together as girls. And fighting, eh? Zada hated coming into any science class after Layla. But then, she blew away her teachers in a different way.
Don't embarrass them.
Oh, I'm not. I'm proud. You're proud and get to say so. This is how I tell it.
They chose different paths. We never thought it would lead them together.
Does it scare you at all, the work that they're doing now?
A little.
Scare us? Well, why would that scare us?
Well, they are at the forefront of this discovery. Zada in translating and interpreting the signals we've received from Luxeterra Society, and Layla's research has focused on travel to exoplanets. Isn't that correct?
Purely theoretical.
But now...
It's not a theory anymore.
Right. Well, that is an adjustment, but this is what we taught them to do. It takes risks to go where no one else has ever gone. To have no guarantee of success.
Let's not go there. For now, they are both busy and working together. International collaboration. It starts at the family level. Competing sisters turned into new discoveries for the whole planet.
The whole universe.
That's all we know for now. And that's a miracle.
That is very true, and hard to keep in perspective. Thanks for sharing that with our listeners. I suspect many of us are feeling the same trepidation about our future and what this mission means to our planet.
We can't speak to what everyone is experiencing.
No, we can't. But we do know what it's like to be displaced. What sacrifices it takes to create a future for your family. For the future of the human race, this is the risk to take.
So it's bittersweet, and all we can do is wait.
Until we join them in Edinburgh. Lucky us, we get to be in the center of it all.
Perhaps.
Thanks for your time. We do look forward to hearing what you learn in Edinburgh. Best of luck with the move, Mr. and Mrs. Karam. Thank you for joining us here today on Transmission Podcast. Stay close.
This has been Transmission Podcast, hosted by Cecilia Lynn Jacobs and produced by Ian Garrett and Kate Ladenheim. Original composition and sound editing by Miles Avery. Transmission is a podcast and performance series speculating on what might happen if we began to receive the popular broadcasts of intelligent alien life, and follows two sisters selected to lead an interstellar mission to make first contact. Learn more about our team and upcoming performances at luxeterra.com and find us on Facebook and Twitter at Luxeterra. That's LuxeTerra. Transmission is a production of Toaster Lab in Canada and is a fiscally sponsored project of Fractured Atlas in the United States. Thank you.